Welcome to the Salem Chamber Podcast. If it affects your business or this community, we'll be talking about it. Today I'm joined by Jim Vu from Citizens Bank. Jim is also very present in Salem's downtown area. He is a property owner. He understands the life of a restaurateur. Jim, when you look at the city of Salem today, what are some of the challenges that are omnipresent? What are you seeing each and every day that Salem citizens are likely seeing as well?
I think we're seeing the which businesses are open or closed. That's pandemic related. I believe that you have a lot of issues with homelessness that is presenting our city in a negative light for first time and current residents and longtime residents also. So those are challenges that we're facing that are glaring and concerning.
For the businesses, and you look at those on Cascade Gateway Park, Wallace Marine Park with Ace Hardware and Ross Fresh Markets and the courthouse and just the sheer amount of damage and vandalism. And unfortunately, as was recorded at the Walmart out north on Cascade Gateway, where we had an actual assault. Those businesses, what is the best option for them to convey what they're dealing with? Is the best platform for them to voice that to elected officials, or are there other things that you see we could be doing in this community to help advance getting our arms around the challenges that we're dealing with homelessness?
I think the reason why a lot of businesses are afraid to step up is that you become targeted.
Mm-hmm.
So if you say something, you're seen as dispassionate and then retaliated against. It happened at Jackson Jewelers.
Mm-hmm.
One of the owners of Jackson Jewelers spoke up at a council meeting, and within a week, his business was targeted and windows were broken. I believe it was $15,000 mm-hmm. of damage was done to those windows. That's horrible. Because what you're looking at is that these businesses are providing jobs for folks. I think the feedback is, I think we speak to your counselors. So your city counselors talk to those groups. I'm part of the Salem Main Street Association for downtown. So downtown businesses be able to reach out to us as an organization so we can provide a voice out to it. But I think for individuals to speak up, individual businesses to speak up and also feel they have support, that's what Salem Main Street has been trying to do. And I think we're taking it one step at a time. Every survey that we've done, homelessness and parking are the two issues. Those are the barriers to people feel they're coming in downtown. Parking, I believe, just use the park aids. If you use the park aids, we have twice, I think it's just as many on-street parking as we do in the park aids. Just use the park aids. They're free. They're limitless.
Mm-hmm.
Park and walk around and go to five or six businesses, have a blast. But then, and then the homeless side of it, being able to walk around and feel safe. I mean, you have to understand the perception of safety versus actually being safe.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that my comfort level of walking by individuals that are homeless on the side and saying hi to them, and I know some of those folks' names, that has made me feel more comfortable in the setting. And also be able to identify which ones that I need to keep my eye on. And yeah, there's been a person that's had a knife out, came at me. There's a pile of needles that you don't feel real great about. And so that's, I think, from businesses, we've got to talk to our elected leaders. They're supposed to represent your ward. So in that, I believe in Ward 1, we have Virginia Stapleton. Mm-hmm. So being able to reach out to her, I'm trying to connect with her. We've been emailing back and forth to try and get a open dialogue about what's taking place. I think the chamber is a great access to that, but I think individual businesses have to speak up, because at those council meetings, what they're hearing is testimony from a lot of individuals that are saying, in my neighborhood, in my home, mm-hmm. but they're not hearing from businesses. And I think that voice needs to be represented. It takes time and it takes an investment. And I think businesses that are frustrated and want to speak out, contact with the Salem Main Street Association, contact with the Chamber of Commerce, as well as our counselor for downtown, so that this voice can come together, so we can walk and step together toward the common goal of having a healthy and vibrant downtown.
Let me hit you with two fastballs,
okay.
Just immediate impact. proposal to remove a number of the trash receptacles downtown. Tell me your thoughts.
Horrible idea. Garbage has to go somewhere. And the concerns about that is the amount of time and energy it takes to clean up those messes. I believe that on the city report, it showed that a lot of these garbage cans are broken, so they couldn't be locked properly and closed properly. So then you remove it? That doesn't make sense. Studies go back. Disneyland is the perfect example. Cleanest place on earth. Like, it's the happiest place because there's no trash anywhere. Cast members are trained to pick up trash. What Walt Disney did years ago was to figure out how often do I need to put a trash can out there, is that Walt Disney gave out Hershey bars at Disneyland all throughout. And what they did was they watched and saw how far people would walk looking for a garbage can before they would litter. The answer is 22 feet or 17, 22 or something. I look at that number. But the whole idea is that if people are willing to go up to about 20 feet to find a trash can, if they don't, they're willing to litter. Disney already figured this out, all right? This is R&D, rip off and duplicate.
Mm-hmm.
The answer has already been there. Give people garbage cans within 22 feet and they will throw it away. That's what Disneyland did. If the problem is the garbage cans are broken, so then you have a fork in the road. Fix the garbage can or take them away? That doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Garbage will be produced. So maybe as a city we have in there, so you have recycling, you have glass, you have, garbage, mixed recycling, whatever the case, put those in the resources and make the right thing to do the easiest thing to do.
Jim Vu, one of the most thoughtful voices for downtown Salem, Citizens Bank, downtown property owner. Jim, thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Tom.
I'm here with Commissioner Colin Willis, and we are talking about a very important and important issue that is still prevalent in today's world, and that's the COVID-19 pandemic. Thank you, Commissioner, for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. The first question I have, and I think this is very important for people that are going to be listening to this, is what did the COVID-19 pandemic look like from your vantage point as a elected official, county official? Obviously, it's going to look different for people in different areas from an elected position, but from a county perspective here in Marion County, what did that look like for you?
Well, your county commissioners had a unique role in responding to this pandemic because by statute, by law, we are the local public health authority. And we share that authority with the Oregon Health Authority. So the state has authority when it comes to public health, and your county board of commissioners has authority when it comes to public health. And I remember my first, I guess, earliest memory of the pandemic was last year I served as the chair of the Marion County Board of Commissioners. I remember getting a call from an executive at Salem Hospital on a Sunday saying, our hospital's filling up with people who have COVID, and supplies are short for masks and gowns and face shields. And in fact, we only have about 7 days of masks left. And if we run out of masks, we're gonna have to close the hospital down. I don't know how we're gonna care for these patients. Is there anything you can do to help us? And so I remember calling Jan Fritz and our health department and saying, hey, we gotta get masks to our hospital stat. How are we gonna do this? And over the next 5 days, we called our dentist's offices and our doctor's offices and local area hospitals, and we begged, borrowed, and stole as many masks as we could. And at the time, you couldn't buy masks. I don't know if you remember this, but in fact, we tried to. We went online, tried to buy some masks, and we got an email saying, your order has been interrupted and taken by the federal government. So we actually had a situation where the federal government was using their emergency powers to buy all the masks that were available, and one of our shipments actually got commandeered by the federal government. So that was a super stressful time. Luckily, and I'm grateful to our community, we really pulled together and got the equipment to Salem Hospital they needed to stay open. Over time, those sort of supply lines eased, and they were able to buy masks again regularly. But it was a scary time, and it was something that you know, after the fact, we had to go back and basically give masks back to all the EMS providers and dentist offices. And we actually had a bit of a fight with OHA about that, because OHA said you can't use the federal allocations to give masks to like dentists. And we said, wait a second, these guys gave up their masks to the hospital when the hospital was in need, you know, and we promised them that we would make them whole. And so we're going to do this. And we did it, and nothing bad happened. So
well,
it turned out all right.
Was this before or after kind of the big scare where the first mandates came down in mid-March?
This was right in the middle of that.
Okay.
Yeah. The count started ticking up at Salem Hospital, and there was, you know, they weren't really set up to handle that at first.
Okay. How's the experience been? Obviously, this is something that happens, you know, once in a generation, really. So, you know, a pandemic of this size, we hope. What are some things that you learned from your perspective that, you know, from a leadership standpoint that you kind of maybe didn't think of going into your role, or something that I guess you learned in really helping a community? Was, I think, you know, what you just said is a great example. Is there something specific, another story along those lines?
Well, something that was difficult in navigating this and trying to be there for our community was that there was this political overlay on top of the pandemic response. So I would say the first maybe month really was politics was set aside. It didn't matter whether you were a Democrat, Republican, Independent, governor's office, local government. We all just were working together to keep our hospitals open. Nobody knew how severe this pandemic was. Nobody knew the impact it was going to have on people. We didn't know which populations were most at risk. I mean, it really was a scary time. Unfortunately, pretty quickly, say, you know, by the summer, certainly I saw politics starting to take over and decisions starting to be made based on political calculations. And I think you really saw this most severely in the fall when the governor decided to forcibly close restaurants and gyms right before Thanksgiving, even though at that point we had nearly 8 months of data, and none of the data showed that restaurants or gyms were places that spread COVID. We knew where the hot spots for COVID were, primarily healthcare facilities, prisons, residential homes, places where you had people living together in high density situations, multifamily homes. That's where we were seeing the biggest spread of COVID. We weren't seeing it in restaurants. We weren't seeing it in gyms. There's no data to support that. But these were locations where the governor and OSHA had the most leverage, and they especially had the most leverage against the smallest businesses. So, you know, really it wasn't Home Depot or Lowe's or Amazon that cared about OSHA fines. It was your family owned, you know, a few employee restaurant. Those are the ones that really got hit the hardest. And for me, there was really an injustice here because this was right before the holidays after a really hard year. And so, you know, I was really concerned. I still am concerned about the mental health and the emotional health of our small businesses, not to mention the economic health. I mean, one of the things that happened was basically there was a huge transfer of resources to large multinational corporations away from locally owned businesses. And I still think that that was wrong. I don't think it kept anybody safe. There's no data to suggest that. And so the frustration, I think, for me is, and for the Board of Commissioners, is because it's shared authority, you know, we can't override the governor's authority. Once she steps in and says, I'm doing X and OSHA's going to enforce it, even if, and we did say this, we're not going to enforce this. The sheriff said he's not going to enforce this. Nobody's going to jail over this. This is the governor's thing. She gets to decide what she wants to do. And so I think that was frustrating. Really all we could do was speak out and talk about how this wasn't right and how our local businesses and our local employees, you know, especially those who are kind of the lowest income employees, were going to get laid off right before Christmas. And I just thought that was wrong.
Have you been in communication with county commissioners across the nation that are in kind of a different position where they have opened, their state has opened up? And, you know, found out from them, hey, what does that actually look like in your guys' community? Have you been able to talk with other county commissioners?
I have spoken with other county commissioners throughout this. Oregon is by far the most conservative, the most restrictive county, I would say, especially when it comes to small business, of any state in the country. And I would say most Oregonians, when they go to places like Arizona or Utah or Idaho, they're just confused, you know, because the governor really has put restrictions on us that really haven't been necessary to address the pandemic. It really has been, in my perspective, just furthering her policy aims. And the bottom line is it's just been unfair. I mean, it really, there have been these regulations that have unfairly targeted small businesses and really benefited the large multinational corporations. And I really see that as a major problem. I see that as a policy choice, you know, and it's something that we really fought against. I remember, you know, one of the other sort of moments where we had to make a real decision in a time of crisis was early on March or April when the governor, I guess at the end of March, the governor shut everybody down. We made a decision to empty our economic development budget and give out small business grants to businesses with 5 employees or less. And we had a pretty robust conversation and argument about that because at the time there was no federal money. None of the COVID aid packages had been passed. And so most other counties were not doing this. Most other counties were saying, hey, we're going to go into a recession. We have to hold on to all of our dollars. And we went the other way. We had about $800,000, $900,000 in our economic development budget. And we said, look, if we are not going to show up now, when are we going to show up for our small businesses? And we also knew that some of the larger businesses had ongoing relationships with banks, lending institutions, and those lending institutions were willing and able to basically waive interest penalties and sort of float them for a month or so, which is what we thought at the time the shutdown was going to last. So we really said we want to target this aid to the small businesses, the really, you know, the family-owned businesses who may not have a strong lending relationship with somebody. They may not be very leveraged. They may be doing stuff based on cash. And I remember, you know, at the time, like I said, other counties weren't doing that. They kind of looked at us like we were crazy. But the response we got from the small businesses was just overwhelming. You know, I still remember I had a letter from a guy who was, I think, construction or painting, and he said, I haven't missed payroll in 23 years, and I was about to miss payroll until I got your check, and I just want to let you know how grateful I am for that. And so, you know, taking that risk and getting that money out the door late March, early April 2020, when we didn't think we were ever going to get that money back, is something that I think really mattered to our community.
Absolutely. I know from our perspective at the Salem Chamber, we're thankful for the partnership we've had with our commissioners here in Marion County and your guys's activism in helping our small businesses and fighting for our community and your, you know, conversations with the governor and the Oregon Health Authority and everything. Is there any last things you'd like to say to our listeners that you think they'd find value in or anything like that?
Just that I'm really grateful to be a part of this community and really proud of this community. You know, this last year we didn't just have the COVID pandemic, we also had these wildfires in Santa Ana Canyon. We had over 1,000 people evacuated from their homes. We lost 700 homes. And the community really came together in all parts of the county to support us, to support the folks who had to lost their homes, to support our work and recovery in the canyon. I mean, there's nothing better than going to Woodburn chamber meeting and having somebody tell you like, hey, I'm helping to build a shed up in the canyon for somebody who lost their home, or, you know, going to a Rotary meeting in Salem and having somebody say, hey, you know, we bought tools for this family so that the dad can get back to work, you know. And those are people who aren't from the canyon, they don't live there, but it's part of their community. And so just I'm really grateful for everybody and for what this community did to pull together during this year when it seemed like, you know, the whole world was trying to tear us apart.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again, Commissioner, for your time and, you know, sharing your experiences from your vantage point throughout this whole thing. And thank you for your leadership.
Thank you, Zachary.
So just for your peers, for your group, give us a little bit of background on you, like where you were before, like the Kara that, you know, I met coming from the hospitality industry, and then just kind of what happened when COVID hit last year.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, I've spent 16 15 years in hospitality sales and marketing leadership, and that had been my whole life. I mean, even in high school, I studied hospitality. So then you fast forward to 2020, you know, through my 16 years in the industry, and then the world falls apart for our industry. And then eventually towards the end of 2020, I became unemployed. And I, you know, like I've mentioned before to you, I wallowed in self-pity for about 24 hours. And then I said, okay, I need to stop doing this. I need to come out of that mindset and focus on things that make me happy. And what can I do that makes me happy, but will also bring in money and income? I did not want to be on unemployment. And yes, I did use unemployment because that is what is there for as I grew my business, which is Casey Creative. And so my strengths and my passions in the industry, of course, are helping people and, you know, being hospitable, right? That's what hospitality is. But I really love the marketing component. I loved social media. I love social media. And anything that has to do with giving your business a presence, more visibility. So when I started KC Creative, my focus was really helping businesses create marketing plans, develop them, or execute on them if they already had them. And then a small component was social media management. So here we are. You know, today it's almost 9 months later since I started KC Creative. I started on August 4th, 2020. I remember that was the day I registered with the state of Oregon and with the IRS for my LLC. And I'll always remember that day because it was such a pivotal moment. It was a moment of transformation and change for me. And it has just grown so much thanks to the support of my community, my friends and family. The Chamber of Commerce has been wonderful. That was my first goal, was when I started making money, was to become a member of the Chamber, because I have been part of the Chamber for other businesses that I've worked for in the hospitality industry, and I know what the Chamber can do for you and also what you can bring to the Chamber as a member as well. So that was my very first goal, was to get a membership with the Chamber, and here we are. So my range of clients is just insane. You know, I've only ever worked in hospitality, but now I get to work with multiple different industries, and that's what makes it fun.
So for you, you really took COVID and you made COVID what you needed it to be.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's insightful to say, I had my moment, you know, I had my pity party, I had my funeral over essentially losing a piece of yourself to an industry that you dedicated yourself for years. And then really focusing on that mindset shift to say, okay, I'm still here, I'm healthy, I've got a lot of talent and gifts under my belt, what can I do? So you created KC Creative, you launched it. 9 months now into it, you've got quite the, you know, clientele. Social media is definitely something you shine on for there. But being a young entrepreneur, what was that like though? From essentially you're working for a company, mm-hmm. or companies, because you've been in the
grown. Yeah.
But now you're stepping in, you're becoming an entrepreneur, a young woman entrepreneur. What would be one piece of advice that you can say to any young woman right now who's in that pivotal transition, like where maybe COVID hit them the same way and they're still floundering? I don't know what to do, or I'm still on unemployment because I just feel like I don't have a sense of direction. What would be a piece of advice you would give to a young woman entrepreneur, you know, that could be an entrepreneur, like to say, girl, you can do this?
It really starts with your mindset. So you have to do mindset work. You know, going from I don't know if I can do this to I can do this, mm-hmm. or I don't know if I know my product well enough to be able to sell it, to I know my product and I know I can sell it. It starts with mindset work. And that, as women, we can falter on a little bit of imposter syndrome, mm-hmm. and that can really set us back. So the one thing that I've learned through my 16 years in hospitality, sales and marketing, is confidence. You have to have confidence or nobody's going to purchase from you. You have to love what you do and do what you love. And so that's why, you know, I wallowed in my self-pity for 24 hours and then told myself I need to change the way I think. And I never would have pulled the trigger working as I was working for another company to own my own business, because I was set in the ways of thinking I'm financially stable, I have my family to think about. But then when you are left with no choice and you have no income coming in, you have to do it. But what I would tell people who are currently working for somebody else and not themselves, who are really wanting to start their own business, is to just do it. And you are going to get people who say, no, keep your day job, do this on the side. Well, how are you supposed to grow your side hustle if it's just that, a side hustle? And put yourself out there is another thing that women may not be confident in doing. But if you are a solopreneur and selling service that you provide, maybe you're a service-based business and not a product-based business, you have to put yourself out there. So my biggest thing is, my first is to change your mindset to, I don't know if I can do it, to, I can do it. My second piece of advice would be to build your community and start networking and put yourself out there. And my third piece of advice, if you know what you're going to do, you just haven't done it, is put a plan together. Create a business plan, set some goals, and lean on your community. Most women have a tribe, and if you don't have a tribe, start attending networking events and find your tribe. Because right now, the 2021 is all about the year of women lifting women. And women, or what is the saying? Empowered women.
Women empower women. Yeah.
Exactly. So lean on that and you'll see yourself rise.
Yeah. So the last question or last thing I want to close with, because it's super exciting. So you went from an industry that you kind of knew like nothing else, right, to stepping out and boldly building a business, but you didn't really stop there, did you?
No.
You have now launched. So I want you to share with everyone that you have KC Creative. That's keeping you busy as it is. And I know that because we're friends and I hear all about it. But then you said, you know what? I can do one more thing. What's the one thing that you just started?
It's not like I have anything going on. I've always been really into the fashion industry, and I love clothes, and being in the beauty industry with pageantry, we're all about dressing up and making a great first impression and feeling good when you're wearing the right clothes, right? When you wear an outfit that just makes you happy, you feel good and you love yourself even more. So I took that second passion of mine and started Style Pink Boutique, which is an online-only women's clothing, accessories, and shoes boutique. And I'm 5 weeks in, so today is May 7th. This is week 5, and just having the time of my life. Retail is completely different. You know, it ebb and flows, but I wouldn't have it any other way. And I just have, again, that support system. You're going to have a week where it's really quiet and really so. And then the following week, you just hit it out of the park. And it's exciting.
I'm here with Superintendent Christy Perry. Christy is in charge of the second largest school district in the state of Oregon. She was a finalist for the National Superintendent of the Year. And quite honestly, folks, she's doing a wonderful job with our young people, the support staff that create the Salem-Keizer School District, and all the individuals that come in touch with volunteer efforts, with paid efforts, things to make the Salem-Keizer School District stronger tomorrow than they are today. Christy, today I'd like to touch base on a few topics with you. We have a lot of transition voices that have spoken out in our community regarding the diversity of our student body. Tell me a little bit about what you're doing from a district perspective to help students feel very included in the process
of going through their education?
So we are a minority-majority school district, and so we have a large and very diverse group of students. We also have about 81 languages spoken in our district. And so every day we're navigating lots of richness in language and culture. So our students, we have started a number of student outreach type things and trying to really systematize that. So our latest thing we've done is we have started these student cafes. And we have students who are part of our district student equity team. And they then go out and get students from their high schools. In this first student cafe was around student engagement and attendance. And they were asking students who weren't attending well, what could we do that helped you want to attend more? And this now is in virtual. So there was lots of things about virtual learning that's hard for our kids. But then also they talked about things like, we just want teachers who know us. We want teachers who care about us, know our name, make us feel welcome. So we're trying to get a lot more student voice in our decision making. And also we have a student advisor to the school board right now. And Lynette, Advisor Mamipton, is knocking it out of the park as a representative of student voice on the school board.
That's incredibly progressive what you did there, and a huge leap forward for the district and the board. How has she been received by the rest of her board members?
Yeah. Well, she's been very included by the rest of her board members. And what they're really doing a good job of is she can't vote, but when they're in decision making or in question asking, they always give her a voice there or a place to ask questions. And she asks really good questions. She definitely brings student voice forward. She's not, she's very confident in sharing both concern and perspective. And so that's been really fun to watch. And she brings some joy that students always bring into a situation with adults.
Yeah. This business community is incredibly proud of our partnerships that we have with the Salem-Keizer School District. I want to circle the one and the work that the business community does in supporting the CTEC location. Right. You have been a pioneer in that space. Mm-hmm. Our CTEC facility is widely regarded as the premier facility in the nation. People traveling from outside the area to come and look. When you think of the CTEC and your motivation and support of that program, what are some of the real triumphs that you're seeing that make CTEC so special?
Right. So I think the biggest, there's so many triumphs in CTEC. So that's been my, when I was first hired, the night they signed my contract was when we did the first MOU with Mountain West. So this has been a total labor of love for me. I think the triumphs are that students are engaged, they show up, they care about professional skills and how they show up for our businesses. And the favorite things that they do are when they interact with business and are doing real world applications. The kind of the secret sauce behind it, though, is that we integrate their core content. So they're getting academic credit while doing real hands-on applied learning. So that's the secret sauce of it, is that they're also getting credit. And when they leave us, they can go right into the workforce, into a trade school, into an apprenticeship program, into community college, or into a four-year university. So we have a range of kids and a range of goals with kids, and CTEC gets them to any one of those goals, which is also, I think, pretty powerful and really different than the former vocational ed model that we had prior to career technical ed. So that's been really amazing. Our partnerships with business have been incredible. When we closed for the pandemic and our students couldn't do the hands-on learning, our industry partners showed up, and those were the most attended, well-attended classes in comprehensive distance learning. Kids were most engaged because they were so excited to hear from our industry professionals. And then I think what our industry professionals are getting is a pipeline of workers and a pipeline of employees that will be ready to go. When I got to CTEC yesterday for an event, a student greeted me, asked me the COVID protocol questions, told me how to sign in via COVID. So they're learning the real skills that if they were out in the workforce in a pandemic, they would be doing the same thing.
I love hearing that. I mean, that's real world of what it's really occurring in business today. We're applying within the school district as well. You know, guidance and leadership are huge within this organization. I think Principal Rhonda Rhodes has just led such an incredible effort to put a staff and a team and a culture together where these young people are allowed to thrive and see the different potentials that they could have for careers that maybe wasn't traditionally seen years and years ago. Let's switch gears. Speaking of principals, though, we had Principal Eric Jesperson from McNary High School awarded the Oregon Principal of the Year.
Yes. So Eric, it was announced last Friday that Eric Jesperson, McNary High School, was the Oregon 2021 Principal of the Year by the Coalition of Oregon School Administrators. And he was recognized, his graduation rate is over 90%.
Wow.
That puts four of our six comprehensive high schools over 90% graduation rate, which is, I don't know how far back. I know what it's been since I've been here, and we've been nudging up that graduation rate every year, and at four of our comprehensive high schools at 90 plus graduation rate, really exciting for us. But he's also really closed some gaps in some groups of students who are in that school. During the pandemic, he put together a student success team. It was staff members in his school that spoke Spanish, and they were led in a way that we knew that our students that were still navigating learning English were at the highest risk in the pandemic, and are at a high risk in high school anyway. So they went out, did wellness checks, door to door, got them, made sure they were online, and then have brought them as their first group of students into the school during limited in-person instruction. And that's just an example of what Eric does. Eric knows how to brand his school. They are world-class. Ask anyone in Kaiser. They're world-class. He knows how to brand them. He knows how to set the vision. He knows how to engage students. He has an initiative, 1-1-1, one club, one sport, one activity for every student, because he knows that engagement in the other things are what help kids be successful in their core content as well. So he's just really done a spectacular job at that school. And my biggest struggle is that when people go to McNary, they don't want to ever leave McNary. So if he grows a really strong assistant principal, I got to drag him out kicking and screaming to get them to go to another place.
Sure.
To spread their skills.
Well, that type of innovation and success doesn't occur without a superintendent who fosters that type of atmosphere. Speaking of some of those things, tell me about the biggest challenges you see that you'll be encountering over the next 6 months to the actual end of this calendar year.
I think the biggest challenges are, well, we have a lot of challenges with staff in general, not in a bad way, but we're all so tired. So that means teachers, classified, custodians, bus drivers, superintendents, building leaders. We've really, through this pandemic, had to lead and show up so differently, as have our businesses, that it stretched our bandwidth. So I think the first couple months' goals is rest and rejuvenation and recovery for people that have worked day and night. I mean, I literally have had my technology department in the first days of the pandemic working 24 hours. And so that accumulation of tiredness, which we're seeing in our business community as well, is what we really got to keep an eye on in the next couple months as we approach summer. The second thing is I've got to look to start a school. My goal is 5 days a week of in-person instruction, full court press, as I'm saying, help my people not be so tired, full court press to 5 days a week. In-person instruction in the fall. And what that means is we have to influence the guidance to help us be there in a safe way, and then be sure we are staffed correctly in order to meet whatever the guidelines are, which we don't quite know what they are yet.
Ever changing.
So we've learned to be super flexible and pivot day and night. So that's our real goal for September. And then as we close out the year, I want us to figure out what new normal is. And we have some really big innovations as a school district, we've learned. And we need to figure out what do those mean and how do we persist on the innovations that should last beyond COVID? Because it would also be really easy once we fall back into regular school to go back to the way we were. And there's lots of things that should change. We're doing lots of work around our school discipline processes and how are we restorative rather than exclusionary? How do we keep kids in school versus expelling them from school? All those processes coming on the heels of kids who have been in a global pandemic for a year as well. And how do you really care for them and care for them first before academics happen is always the way. As we prepare for the budget next year, we are trying to reallocate to be sure we have social workers in each of our high schools, to be sure our title program, our title middle schools have social workers, some additional counseling so that we can really support the mental health and social emotional well-being of our kids.
Yeah, our educators, and I'm the product of two educators, both my parents retired teachers from the Salem-Keizer School District, are not asked to simply educate at all.
No.
And we are a wraparound service within the school district. Often, and not often, but I would suggest there are many students who walk in that the best hours of their day are spent right inside the Salem-Keizer School District. Thank you for your efforts on that. Christy, any ways that the business community, we will step up and have proven the weight and gold of the business community when we've needed a bond measure passed, when the district has asked for our support. Are there things and ways that the business community can better support the Salem-Keizer School District?
Well, I think right now, the best thing our businesses can do is focus on their business in a pandemic and to be really attentive to that, because thriving business community helps the school district. And so right now I would feel bad to ask for anything because I want our businesses to thrive. Being a business owner throughout my own personal life, mostly my husband's business, but we were in the restaurant business for 19 years. And last night we said, I don't know how they're doing it. So I guess that would be what I'd want for our businesses right now. You focus on you. If you have intersections into our career technical education programs, if you have ways you want to reach out and help, then please do. But the best thing we can have is a thriving community and thriving business community for our schools. We're doing really well with our bond projects. We don't have another bond coming up right now. If you're excited about our bond projects and you want to reach out, we'll show them to you. But again, really a strong focus on a thriving business community, I think, is the most important community mission right now. Thriving schools, thriving business. Let's really work together to navigate the issues around homelessness in our community, because all of that will help us be thriving as well.
And very refreshing to hear something like that from the individual in charge of our school district. Businesses, there's a very clear recognition of the pains that you've been through. And here is one of our key regional leaders saying, focus on keeping your business in order, staying viable. And at this organization, our job is to help in service to make sure that occurs for you. Christy Perry, doing wonderful things for young people in the Salem area and leading incredibly bright staff members to allow innovation to occur for the benefit of our young people. Christy Perry, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.